And we're back with another episode of the Return of the Roar podcast. My name is Brendan Nunez. Got Frankie Cardicelli here, Sacktown Sports Duo. How you feeling, Frankie?
Good, not great. It's been a... And I was talking to you just a second ago about how you were going through some moves. You were making a move this weekend. You're moving to Roseville, just up down the road a little bit. And you missed a good weekend. If you had to take a little time away and step away from your, let me say, great Kings coverage first and foremost. I'm not just saying that because we're co-workers. But if you had to take a step back for a minute, this was a good time to take a little step back. And I think a lot of us this morning after the Kings lose by, I think, what was it? Did it end up being a 25-point loss last night?
Yeah.
25-point loss.
122.
I think we're all kind of taking a step back right now and taking a breath and kind of seeing where things are. But how are you doing right now, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Like you said, I was very caught up in the move this weekend. That made me miss the Saturday game live, but caught up later. Already knowing the outcome going into that game, it was a pretty depressing watch, not going to lie. And then, you know, go into this game against... You're like, all right, they got Houston again. This is a good opportunity to just bounce back. You know, you can wipe this bad taste out of your mouth really quick. Just go out there and take care of business against Houston. And they got killed from the jump. Like, from the very beginning. There's a lot of things you could break down, right? Like, I do takeaways after every game. And going into this one, it's like, I really only have one takeaway that they just didn't show up.
Yeah.
Like, there's little things that we'll get into. But they just didn't look like they had the spirit, the energy, the pace, or like anything. There was nothing working for them. They didn't look anything like the team that I think we saw for all of last year and, you know, the first, what, 3-4 games of this season.
Yeah, and in my takeaways, too, from last night, same thing. My main takeaway was, who is this team? That was all it really was who are these guys? Because watching them almost look panicked. I mean, on offense, which is kind of their, that's not kind of, it's definitely their bread and butter. The Sacramento Kings were the team they were last year because their offense was historic. It was historically a great offense. It's a reason why they clinched the Pacific Division, why they went to the playoffs, they ended the drought. And last night, and we, again, I'm sure we'll talk about De'Aaron Fox's absence and how much, I don't want to say blame or how much reasoning you want to put behind that performance, but they were taking the shot clock down to single digits. And by single digits, I mean under 4 seconds. I want to say over 10, 12 times last night, they would force these late in the shot clock possessions in a lot of one-on-one, a lot of dribbling, no ball movement. It just is not something that we're used to seeing since maybe before the Mike Brown era and kind of going back to Luke Walton era. And I kind of had a tweet about there, and I said, this kind of feels like we're watching a game in 2021 or 2022. Like, it's kind of what it feels like. And they go on to score the least amount of points they've had in a game since that year when Luke Walton was fired. So it's not great times right now, but it's a long season. And I want to ask you, Brendan, because people are kind of taking this in their own way. And I'm wondering, your concern meter, what level are you on the concern meter right now? Are you 1 to 10? Are you, by 10 being time to panic, 1 being long season?
Well, it's definitely a low number. I'll probably go like a 3. Like, I think this has been about, I shouldn't say as expected, but like, I thought that if De'Aaron or Domas went down, the team would struggle. I didn't expect it to be this bad, right? Like you said, not putting up points, and I love that you apologized for even mentioning the Luke Walton era. I think that's hilarious and understandable.
Hey, but you know, they're on their feet. Luke Walton and Dave Yeager. What we call it, the Kings Avengers and Kings head coach Avengers in Cleveland. It's, yeah. Walton and Yeager.
Yeah, this team led the league with 120.7 points per game last year, and now it's 3 straight games where they didn't make it over 101. You know, in both of those Houston ones, they didn't get to triple digits. It's like, it's everybody, you know, like they do obviously miss De'Aaron, and a lot of it is what he does. But leading up to this, we knew De'Aaron was going to be out for a little bit and, you know, asking questions about who do you want to step up and blah, blah, blah. And more often than not, the answer is it needs to be done collectively. It needs to be done as a group. And they all looked worse. like literally everybody except maybe like I think Kevin Herter's been okay, and then he coach highlighted Keon Ellis, Kessler Edwards, which those guys are great. They brought in some energy. I don't know if they're actually going to make their way into the real rotation. It wouldn't surprise me if we see it next game just as a way to prove a point, but they said everybody needs to collectively do more. And I feel like that's been so difficult for them at this point. I think they're going to be able to right the ship. The last thing I worry about with this team is their offense, you know, and I get Houston was packing the paint. If I have any concern, like long-term concern, it probably points to Domantas Sabonis. Like he had that game against the Golden State Warriors, where I don't know his final tally, but he ended up with the most combined points and field goals he's had in a Sacramento Kings jersey. He had 16 field goal attempts, made 8, and 12 free throw attempts, only made 7. But he was extremely aggressive in that first game without De'Aaron Fox, you know, and that's a team that does exactly what Houston did to him last night. They pack the paint and try to take away the shooters and sort of force Domas into being a scorer, quote unquote, right? And then this game against the Rockets, I don't understand. Again, I know Houston is packing the paint, but I think that it's only fair for the first guy to be pointed at is the one all-star that was out there that shot the ball 4 times. Like, again, I know how Houston was defending him, but that was maybe one of the most surprising things to me. Like, I don't expect Domas to just go assert himself every single possession. I know he's pass first, but sometimes you have to, right? Like, taking 4 shots in a game where your team could not score, you played 30 minutes, and you're the all-star out there, taking 4 shots, only 3 free throws is crazy to me. It's the least amount of points he scored in a Sacramento Kings jersey. And it is tied only one other time wearing a Kings jersey did he take 4 field goal attempts or less. And it's in a game where his team cannot score and does not have De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, I mean, it honestly, like you said, it's one thing that I guess is concerning. And I think the fact that other players around Sabonis in the starting lineup have been playing so horrible, I feel like it's kind of slipped through the cracks, but it's a good point. And to that extent, I mean, Harrison Barnes last night, I'm looking at last 2 games, actually. 7 field goal attempts in the first game. And then the next game, I think he had 6 last night. 6 last night. And then also along with that 1 rebound. So you're seeing guys that are playing big minutes for the Kings right now. The most minutes, the starters. Sabonis, like we talked about, probably is, I don't want to say worst game as a King, because I think he had a game where he had over 10 or 11 turnovers. That's up there as well. But I mean, as far as what they needed from him and how he didn't show up, that's up there. Keegan Murray still fighting his way through it. Him and Kevin both had a good start last night. I thought they were kind of on the right track. They had 8-7 points each in the first quarter. But the offense, for whatever reason, and maybe it's because of substitutions and rotations and they come out of the game, but you stop finding those guys, and there's nobody else that was going. I mean, as far as the starters go, those are your only 2 guys that finished with over 8 points last night. Kevin Herter with 13 and Keegan Murray with 12. Then the rest of the guys are, like we highlighted, Keon Ellis is 15 over 14 minutes. Great job by Keon Ellis and Colby Jones, who had 10, to kind of inject some life late. But the Kings don't really need that right now. They need their starters to perform, and they have not. Since De'Aaron Fox went out, and we haven't even gotten Davion Mitchell yet, but the starters have been horrible. And it's hard to kind of see where the easy fix is. I think it just kind of comes down to making shots and finding your rhythm and kind of reasserting your identity, because what they're doing on offense right now, and again, give credit. I know Mike Brown gave credit last night, and some people are tired of giving the Houston Rockets credit because it's been 2 games now that they've stomped all over the Kings, but you got to give Ime Udoka credit. And that's what you even pointed out last week, that, hey, the Rockets are not, they're not a bad team. And I think I'm guilty of that myself. I think a lot of other Kings fans and maybe some journalists were kind of guilty of looking at the Rockets as a, okay, here's an opportunity for the Kings to get right, but this isn't last year's 22-60 Rockets. I mean, Jalen Green's a guy. Dylan Brooks, he completely just destroyed the Kings, which is probably the worst thing you can see as an opposing basketball fan, as Dylan Brooks blowing kisses to your team's bench while just completely annihilating them. And then, obviously, you have Fred VanVleet on that roster. There are some good players, and that doesn't even highlight. Şengün was just, I mean, he is a physical presence, man. Like, he is, you can't really bully him down low. Like, he just, that's where the physicality, that conversation comes in again. Watching Sabonis just bounce off of somebody, I'm not used to seeing that. And we saw that this weekend. But then also, you know, it was just a complete effort by them, and the Kings had no answer. So my main takeaway from this is the starters have been horrible. I don't know if that's what you're pointing at or you're looking at as the key issue with this team right now, but I'm just wondering, in your opinion, if De'Aaron Fox misses, let's say he misses two more games, and we don't know about that. There was no practice today on Tuesday, so we do not know if he's participating. We'll know when the injury report comes out, I think at 5 o'clock, 5:30, we'll see if he's questionable out, what his label is. But if De'Aaron Fox misses two more games, is there a quote-unquote easy switch in your mind? Like, do you want to make some rotational changes, or do you kind of want to roll out the same five against Portland and say, okay, let's see if we can get back on track?
Yeah, I mean, the answer, or well, the obvious fix that everybody's going to point to is starting Malik, right? Starting him at the one in place of Davion. I think that Domas having a guy that can help hit the paint, like paint touches, one of their offensive staples, just hardly exist without De'Aaron often. You know, they try to go to some post-ups that takes him out the flow of their offense. Like, Malik Monk is the only guy that can really do it. They can just break down his defender, get to the paint, and make plays from there. I think it'd be really beneficial to have him next to Domas. I also think that the bench units have kind of been okay during these games, you know? And it's like, okay, well, where's the balance there of like, yeah, the starters need to be better, but do you want to mess with the bench? You do need to just be better in general, and majority of that is going to come from your starters. So I think moving Malik into that could help. But I think, like, it's just everybody, really. Like, it's so hard to look at, like, one thing is like, oh, I think this will help. Like,
it's multiple guys.
Team effort. Yeah, like, I pointed at Domas first, not because I thought Domas was horrible necessarily or, like, stood out as horrible compared to everybody else. He's trying to get his teammates involved. He's yelling at dudes. He's saying, what are we doing, after giving up easy layups? And Mike picks that up and everything. So he's trying. I just think that, like, you're the all-star. You should be the first guy that gets pointed at. But you went down the list, like, Harrison did nothing. Nothing in that
game.
He's not
even taking field goal attempts. I mean,
no, like, usually you get one quarter, right, where you're like, okay, Harrison scored 12. He had like 4 or 5 free throw attempts. He kind of controlled the pace. Just like, one of the big things De'Aaron is good at is that, like, if the other team is going on a run, let me just take matters in my own hands real quick, get a couple buckets, slow everything down, try to control the momentum or not let it get out of hands. I think Harrison is good at that at times too. And that just didn't happen. Like, Davion not hitting shots. Keegan Murray, I think there is, like, some optimism in these Keegan Murray games, because I thought there were a lot of moments that I thought he created space, but then just didn't take it. He just did another move. And I think that going back in film, like, he's going to continue to develop as a guy that takes more shots.
To not be as passive, yes, right? Yes. He is still hesitating.
Yeah, and he hasn't been good. Like, you can go down the line. Sasha has not been hitting shots in Houston. JaVale has actually been pretty solid offensively. He's fouling a lot, mm-hmm. especially in that last Houston game, 4 fouls in 10 minutes and Jeez. 2 turnovers also in those 10 minutes.
That's, like, the thing. Do you have it in front of you? How many turnovers has he had over this 3-game span?
I only have this most recent game, and then the previous one against Houston, he had, as my box score decides to totally.
No, you're good. I could probably find away. It too. It might not be as bad
turnovers in the first Houston game. Yeah, actually.
I'm sure it's not as bad as I'm thinking. I just feel like the turnovers we're seeing from him are just very, very bad, and they're coming at inopportune times. I know we had one last night when they were in the middle of a run. I mean, I don't know if Houston was in like a 24-3 run or whatever it was, but just a very bad, very bad timing. But yeah, 4 fouls last night and 2 turnovers. I like the 10 points, and I like the field goal efficiency. I mean, he's been very good near the rim this season. I mean, he's shooting 64% from the field. But
it was just the one where he ran somebody over, right? As they were going in transition, he just totally ran somebody over for no reason. It made no, and like you said, the timing of it was really, like, honestly, that one made me laugh. There was a lot of moments last night where it's like, you just kind of have to laugh because there's nothing that's going your way. Yeah.
I mean,
from the Kings perspective, Chris Duarte has looked lost on offense.
Bad.
He looks interesting defensively, but he fouls a good bit. And that makes things hard for all these other playmakers, you know, like, at some point shots are just going to go down. But I actually kind of thought in that Houston game, the second Houston game, that especially in the first half, they made a lot of like tough shots. You mentioned those late shot clock attempts, and you're right, there was a lot of those. They made, like, I thought what was higher than expected on those, and still went into the half with what, like 44 points?
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of them were crazy. Like, I think HB had a crazy fadeaway at the shot clock buzzer. Even like Malik, they waved it off, but he hit a crazy.
Kevin hit one from really deep.
Yeah. Like, they're getting lucky on, I don't want to say lucky, but they're just not the shots you want.
And like, so yes, I think Malik is the guy that can replicate what they're missing from not having De'Aaron the most, right? But just putting him in the starting lineup fix everything? I don't really know. At this point, I'm down to try it from Sacramento's perspective. I also am not going to think they're ridiculous for not trying it necessarily, because there is something to this McGee-Monk pick and roll that gives you some offensive juice off the bench, and these other starters should be able to do more than what we've seen. Like in that game against Houston, they had a good shot. Last year, when they played without Fox, their offense wasn't great, right? Offensive rating with Fox, 119.9, right? This is last season. With him on the floor versus off the floor, not games, but on the floor, off the floor. Fox on the floor, 119.9 offensive rating. Off the floor, 112.6 offensive rating. So goes down 7 points. But their defensive rating also went down about 6 points. You know, typically, De'Aaron isn't out there, you have a better defensive lineup. Like, specifically, you look at Davion. Davion is an offense for defense sort of substitution there, right? And you're not getting it done defensively either. Like, Houston put up 122 in that game, and then 107 in the game prior, which isn't horrible. I know they had that big scoreless run in the third that you've highlighted. But it's not like you're sacrificing one thing and getting better somewhere else even.
Yeah, I mean, and just kind of looking at defensive rating, not to kind of go on to Davion, if that's off base, I guess, but consistency to me has been the problem with not just Davion, I guess, the whole lineup. There's no consistency. There's no consistency out of any one player right now. Is there one player in your mind that has been consistent? To me, it's been De'Aaron, who has only played 3 games, granted, but yeah. As far as consistency goes, I don't know. I mean, Malik, I guess we could say, if I had to say one, and he's not even had a great stretch, or he hasn't been that consistent, but out of everybody,
JaVale maybe has been consistent, but not consistent in the right way.
You almost cursed last week.
Consistently doing, yeah, I know, but he's consistently doing the crazy plays and the good things. Yes, he's been the same chaotic self every game. Is all
he's consistently being JaVale McGee.
Yes, exactly.
Consistently. I kind of want to talk about Davion for a minute. I don't know if this is the right time to go to it, but when we talk about consistency, I mean, Davion Mitchell is that we're at the point now, we're in year three. It has been 6 games. I'm going to go ahead and make that disclaimer. But we've yet to really see a steady dose of consistency from him. We know what he brings on defense. His on-ball defense is so valuable. He's one of the better on-ball defenders in the NBA. He's great at taking charges. That remains consistent. But the Kings need more than that. When De'Aaron Fox, who is one of the most dynamic scorers in the NBA today, the quickest player in the NBA, he is the engine that makes his team go. When he's out, the drop-off just can't be this significant. And I'm not looking for 15 points per game on 40% shooting and 5 assists. I'm not looking for that. But I'm looking for a stopgap. And by that, I mean someone that can run the offense, do so in a way that the Kings are not looking like a completely different team. Again, because their identity, and it's not all Davion's fault, but he is the head of a snake right now. He's the point guard. Their identity's been stripped from them. And just looking at his numbers, I mean, of course, this is in the COVID year, and De'Aaron was, I think he had COVID at the end of the year, and Davion was a starter at the end of the year. But I think this was a stretch at the end of the season that made us all kind of believe that Davion could be a starter. Over 19 games in his rookie year, he started 18 points per game, 2.5 boards, 7.5 assists, 37 minutes per game, 45% from the field, and 33% from three. 20 games is a pretty good dose. Last year, just 9 games, 9 points per game, 4 assists, 44% from the field, 29 from three. Pretty significant drop off. And now this year, we're looking at, you know, lows across the board in 3 starts, 8.5 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, 36% from the field, 32% from three, and his minutes are down to 26. So what we're seeing here is he's playing less and less in these opportunities. He used to be a high volume, better results guy. And for a year and change now, and including the playoffs where he was, I hate to say it, but he was unplayable in those and a couple last couple games. And maybe there's an argument for he should have been thrown at Steph Curry as a prayer because the guy was going for 50. But do you think there's a chance we still see Davion Mitchell kind of grow into a player that the Kings are going to want to have around for longer than the end of his rookie scale contract? Because, I mean, when you see guys like Colby Jones come on the scene and do what he does and seeing how confident he looks at the basketball and he can shoot and the defensive versatility is still there, maybe not to the extent of Davion, but he can play defense and he can play offense. I mean, is the writing on the wall, or do you think that it's too early to tell and the season has to unfold a little longer?
I'll start by saying that, you know, De'Aaron is 25, Davion is 25. And I've been saying a couple times that, like, I still think De'Aaron can get better. I've been treating 25 as like, you know, actually De'Aaron's still pretty young. And I think that
is
I
that
have
because
to
you're 25
same aspect. Sure. Yeah. That's why I'm 26 now, Franklin.
Okay, oh, sorry. Sorry, Grandpa. Grandpa shaved his beard. He looks a little younger now.
True. But I like Davion can absolutely still get better. He's going into his third year. I think that it's been the logical thing from a team construction standpoint to probably move him before you re-sign him for a little while. Like, I think a part of the difference in those numbers also, by the way, is that his first year was so much of a different offense, just running pick and roll a lot with Rashawn Holmes, really just running a lot of pick and roll, which I don't know that he's even necessarily good enough at that to warrant a lot of those touches, but I do think it is kinder to him than this like free flowing offense that Sacramento runs. That's very based on like quick decisions. And he's just not the quickest decision maker offensively, which is kind of funny because he really is defensively. Right. But you know, it depends what this guy is going to make when we eventually reach restricted free agency. And I just don't think that it's worth Sacramento spending some money on a backup point guard that might not fit necessarily really in their identity. And that's not necessarily fully Davion's fault. You know, we saw his minutes dip a lot when Coach Brown came in, because again, I don't think the scheme is the kindest to him. And you have a star point guard. Like, you don't, it's the same way that the Kings are not spending much money on a backup center because they are allocating so much money and minutes every game to their starting center. So I kind of thought that the writing was probably on the wall at some point, that he's going to be more valuable to a different organization than to your own, therefore making him a pretty good trade candidate in my mind. And
yeah,
if he emerges as a okay backup, then that makes you feel that much more comfortable.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and when you're looking at where this Kings team is, and I think we've talked about it before, but they're on the clock right now. I mean, they have a 3-year window. To in my opinion here, I mean, I think De'Aaron Fox is going to be a King for a long time. That's my own personal opinion, just a feel. But 3 years left on his contract. Mike Brown, I believe, is 3 years left. Kevin Huerter, Harrison Barnes. So they have all these guys that are aligned on in this window. Monty McNair. And granted, and also father time as well. I mean, De'Aaron Fox will be 28, 29 at the end of his contract. Sabonis will be in his 30s. You know,
speedy guards like De'Aaron don't have the longest shelf life.
Yeah, you have to wonder, can he turn into a Mike? I think Mike Conley's been the comp forever. Can he literally become a Mike Conley and become a 3-point shooter and a mid-range guy and you know, a better defender? I mean, can he be a Mike Conley? That's a conversation for down the line. But to that point, you need to kind of maximize this window. And when you look at that window, what guys are going to get you there? Because the Kings have a superstar in De'Aaron Fox in the making, I believe. Domantas Sabonis is a good number two, number three, probably number three in court. If the Kings want to go to, you know, the NBA finals, that's been the longest, I think, a big conversation is, can Sabonis be your number two and go to the finals? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I think they probably need another 2-3 guy leaning towards two, and you got to make a move to make that happen. So you have Kevin Huerter, Harrison Barnes, Davion Mitchell. I feel like Davion's the most likely name to be floated in that scenario, but I'm wondering, the more that he plays in these situations and the worse that he looks, is that going to make his stock take a dip, or is it kind of just a NBA executives and teams know who he is? He's a guy that can play good defense, and maybe you get a couple threes out of him here and there. But are you worried at all about his stock being hurt while he's going through this again?
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, to an extent. I think that some teams could talk themselves into, you know, him playing a different type of basketball. Maybe will suit him better. Or I honestly thought previously, obviously these last games have not fit that. And I guess to your point of potentially dropping his stock, I thought previously he did better in more minutes, you know, that he was a rhythm guy.
Definitely.
That did better when he was out there more, and obviously has not been the case. Like last night's game, he's giving up the ball and doing the most like basic jog to his spot on the floor. And it's like, gosh, I just know that pisses Mike off. Like he's constantly, and in that post game, he was talking about their pace, not just in the full court, but in the half court, you know, sprinting through your actions, something that I always thought Kevin Huerter has been really good at. Like he's just jogging through it. And it's like, God, that's not Davion, dude. You know, like there was such a weird energy around it last night, and Davion was definitely a part of that. I mean, it can't be helping his stock around the league, right? Is there any point, and I, you know, don't want to like, they got their butt kicked by Houston twice, and I don't want to get on here and talk about, okay, what trades can you make right away necessarily, like a bunch of them necessarily, but if you actually had a guy that was a number three right now, how much easier would this have been? Like, I know that Keegan Murray, this is going to be a process.
Yeah.
But,
you know. I think that's something that I think it's the most outspoken I've seen. I think it's baby second baby draft, our friend Tim Maxwell, that this was a concern in the offseason even. And I think we all did kind of feel that way for a minute, and maybe some, like myself included, kind of thought, okay, they went with the color in, you know, outside the edges. They kind of went in with that route. They kept Harrison Barnes, which is fine, because I don't know if it was realistic to really upgrade that position in free agency. I don't know if the Kuzma situation would have worked out. Maybe, maybe not. Sounds like there wasn't much of an interest anyway to begin with. But we're getting to a point now where, okay, what if this is the beginning of something? And maybe it's not. Like I said before we recorded, maybe the Kings win by 25 tomorrow night and Fox is back and we're not, you know, we're going forward. But I think at some point there's going to be a conversation of, this is not last year's team. They're not surprising anybody. Teams have had a whole offseason to scout them and scout their offense. And
the Warriors gave them the blueprint, quote unquote.
Of course, but target their play style. And I mean, I don't know if that's what went into the last couple of games in Houston. I don't think Ime Udoka was some mastermind that completely just solved the Kings. I think there was a lot of shooting themselves in the foot going on. But the more the season goes on, you have to wonder, like, let's say if the Kings are, I don't want to get too much into hypotheticals after six games, but hypothetically, like, let's say it's Christmas and the Kings are 5 under. Then what? Is it time to hit, you know, pull the ripcord on something and make a move? Honestly, in my mind, probably. I mean, if the Sacramento Kings are 5 games under .500, and, you know, we're about to turn the calendar to 2024. And again, this is such a hypothetical and people are probably angry about it, but that might mean it's time to make a move. So that's what I'm telling others that are asking me how I'm feeling.
Right.
I'm not going to worry about it right now. And I think you said you were a 3 on the scale.
Yeah.
Panic meter. I'm probably at like a 2 or 3. Like, yeah. I'll say this, if they lose to Portland in a similar fashion, like if De'Aaron Fox does not play tomorrow and the Kings lose by, I mean, they shouldn't lose at all. In my opinion, I think I said last week, I was being greedy and said 3-1 over the next 4. That was my ask. But if they don't compete tomorrow, I'm looking for a basketball game. I haven't watched a basketball game since Golden State. I don't know what we've been watching. We've been watching something different, but I'm looking for a competitive basketball game with structure, with, you know, flow, an actual rhythm on offense, because there hasn't been that to this point. But, you know, just to kind of go back to what's going wrong, I mean, the shooters, I think Kevin Huerter says it best. And I think a lot of shooters have said it too. You just got to keep shooting. Is that kind of what the way you're looking at Keegan and Kevin and those guys? It's like, they just got to keep shooting.
Yeah, I think those shots will go down. Like, I'm not necessarily worried about the 3-point shooting. I think that they need to hit the paint a little bit more, right? And that will help make some of those spray threes easier. Like, you look at point paints through these six games, right? First three with De'Aaron, 48, 54, 56. One of those is overtime. But the three most recent, 38, 42, 38. Like, obviously, that's something that De'Aaron is just one of the best in the league at. So, you're, again, not expected to replicate that, but I think that makes things a lot easier. I kind of, like, have two different perspectives that I think... I don't know which one I lean towards, but I think it's one of these two, right? Last year, the Kings were 2-6 at this point. But I was not really worried. Even when they started 0-4, I'm sorry, they were 2-4 through six games is what I mean. Same record that they're at right now.
They went on to be 3-6, though. So even like, yeah. If you want a little more perspective, I guess.
But those losses didn't feel that bad, right? They lost by Portland in their home opener by 7 points. Portland actually started the year really well last year. That was the game Harrison had, I think, 30-something career high. They lost to the Clippers at home by 2 points. It was a really good game. And then you lost in Golden State by 5, and then you lost to Memphis by 15, that being the worst one. But all those losses were close. Like, I will say these losses feel way worse and more concerning than those first four did last season. They feel more like there was a couple games last year. They went on that East Coast road trip. Mm-hmm. And I think they played New York and Philly in two straight games.
Yeah. They got destroyed in both games.
That was my highest panic meter last year, was for sure when that happened. But both those instances happened last season. They won 48 games and were third in the West. You know, this team has a resilience. I don't think coach is losing the locker room or anything like that. And if that happens, that's a concern. But if, you know, coach is going out there saying this is a learning lesson, this is an opportunity for us to hit at some adversity and keep growing from here. And I think it could either go that way, or the other side is that kind of everything that the national critics were saying that we're low on the Kings is happening. Their league leading offense last year just isn't quite going down at the same rate. And that'll even back out or get closer to what it was last year, even if it doesn't reach the same number, right? But the other thought is, well, they were extremely healthy last year. How are they going to react when they have some injuries? And, you know, we're only seeing it a little bit so far with De'Aaron, but the answer so far has been not good.
Not good.
And it's really been everything that the critics pointed out going into the year. But I think, you know, there were moments like this last season, and they ended just fine. So I don't know which direction it's going to go, but that's, you know, kind of the two, I guess, trains of thinking that I go through right now.
Yeah, and just looking at the numbers too, I mean, the Kings were a top five shooting three-point team last year. I mean, there's an argument, I guess, for top 10, but I think they're top five. They're top five in made three-point field goals. I think they're top 9 in three-point field goal percentage. This year, they are second in the NBA in three-point field goal attempts. They're letting it fly, but the results are not there. They're 24th in three-point field goal percentage. They're making 32% of their threes, and they're chucking it a lot. And I feel like an easy solution is, and I think we said it during the NBA playoffs last year, we kept saying it, and it just never happened. But the shots are going to fall eventually, right? I mean, maybe in a seven-game series, it's harder to kind of fall into that. But game 6 of 82, you're having a horrible start from three. I think looking at their game logs, I mean, they've shot, I think, under 32% in three or four games this year of the six. Yeah, so we're looking at a 26%, 30%, 31%, under 32% in half their games. That's just not who this team is. So when you look at the shooters this team has, too, and the fact that Trey Lyles probably will come back, I'd imagine maybe tomorrow or Friday as well.
Are we not talking about that enough? Trey not being available?
I think that it's definitely something that should be talked about more. I don't know if it's like the whole solution, but I feel like when you look at a guy who played the role that he played last year, how important he was, and how we just haven't seen him at all. I think if you have a fully healthy Kings team with De'Aaron Fox running point and Trey Lyles being your seventh man off the bench, I think that changes things. That makes you one player deeper, and it's a pretty significant piece deeper. And the fact that the Kings haven't had him, no doubt. I mean, Sasha looked really good at the beginning of the year. Looked very good, I think, in the first 2-3 games. And now I think we're kind of starting to see, and I can't remember who said it on Twitter, but I think it might have, I can't remember who said it. it was one of the guys from the King's Herald, though. I'll have to try to remember who said it, but that they're worried about when opposing defenses kind of catch on to Sasha. And while he did have a couple good looks that aren't going down, you have to wonder if it is time to have Trey Lyles when he comes back. He's going to slide in and kind of take those minutes, and maybe we see Sasha in certain situations in the Kings in offense, or there's 18 seconds left on the clock at the end of a quarter and Mike puts him in for offense, something like that. But I feel like the Kings missing Trey Lyles is definitely more noteworthy than not. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
Definitely. Definitely. And rotationally, there were things to figure out last season. KZ Akpala notoriously started four games. Coach made his adjustment, figured out what the right rotations were. And even, you know, Rashawn Holmes was getting some run at the beginning of the year. And then they came to realize maybe that's not the best way to go about this. Like, they made adjustments as the year goes on, just as every team does. You know, having Trey back, I do think will be really important. We're talking about the offense not playing well, the spacing maybe not being great. I think decisiveness is something that Trey got really good at during his time with the Kings. And obviously the shooting, like that five out lineup would really help you offensively. And of course, everything De'Aaron does. So I think that it's really highlighting the importance of De'Aaron. But you do miss Trey in this process. It's just six games, though. There's so much basketball left to be played.
Like,
and I'm betting on a unanimous coach of the year, to be honest, to figure it out.
Oh, for sure. And like I said, it's just funny how, you know, emotions are very fleeting in sports. I get that. But it's like more so in baseball. It's like a thing. You know, my buddies always talk about how season's over one day and literally they play every day. So the next day you just can, you know, they could win 8-0 on your film. Like, okay, well, here they are. If the Kings come out tomorrow and they punch the Blazers in the mouth and they, you know, shoot 40% from three and they hit the boards, yeah, I think we'll be feeling pretty normal again. I mean, teams go through bad stretches, and that's something I've been thinking about too, is even the best teams, they go through rough stretches at some point, unless you're the, you know, 96 Bulls or 98 Bulls and or the 2016 Warriors, who seemed like they were going to steamroll their way to the finals until, you know, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving had something to say about it. But
there were games like this last year. It's the fact that there were two in a row against the same team.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I could pull that up right when we're sitting here and to see, and I have it right here, I guess. But let me just see like how they did in those not back-to-backs, but I guess you can call them back-to-backs or same city back-to-backs. Like that's a home one. Houston last year, I mean, they beat them twice. I mean, they beat them by 20, and then the De'Aaron Fox fouled at the buzzer situation. So they won those. Portland's horrible, so they beat Portland twice. I feel like there's another one I'm not forgetting. I mean, there's some home ones, and then they split with Denver.
They went to Minnesota twice.
They lost one of those. They lost
the first one. The second, I believe, was the OT game that Trey
yes
played backup five after Domas fouled out.
Speaking of Trey Lyles, that game in overtime, I think he had something like 9 points. I have it right here. He had in overtime 8 points. 8 of their 15 points. He'd half their points. Not quite Malik Monk scoring, I think, 11. He was like one of the third king in franchise history to score double digits in overtime. But
they also played Dallas twice in a row last year. This was right after Kyrie got traded there. 114-122 loss in the first one. Second one, 133-128 win.
So we're seeing a split, a healthy dose of these splits. And I guess this is the first time they've got just absolutely waxed in both of these away back to backs. But I'm to kind of bring it all in. I feel like this is still a good team. I feel like other teams right now in the season, it's very early and they're trying to figure out kind of how things work. While it is a lot of the same returning players, there's some differences here. There's some differences. And I know that, I guess that's another question I can ask you too, is there's been a lot of, I guess, blowback. For the first time in Mike Brown's coaching era with the Kings, we're seeing a little bit of frustration from some fans. Some things I've been seeing, a little frustration as far as the fact that he's putting a lot of emphasis on defenses here. As first of all, I think he should, for a team that kind of was their Achilles heel last year. They were a bottom tier team defensively, 25th in defensive rating. And Mike Brown is which we can't forget, he's a defensive minded coach. I mean, he was not an offensive guy when he came here. I think he's had decent offenses, but he was a defensive coach when he was hired. And I think that was kind of the thought process behind it too, was the Kings have been so bad defensively here comes a guy that can help fix that. Well, this year he's been outspoken about defense is going to be a priority and how he wants to be a top half defensive team. And people are upset because they think he's taking away from the offensive focus. Do you see that? I don't. I mean, I think it's fair to put more of an emphasis on defense, but do you think that he has put so much of an emphasis on defense that offense has taken a back seat?
I do not. I think some of the physicality stuff might leak over into the offense, but I don't think that the offense that was averaging 120 last year is just going to be chilling around 105 this season. Like, they're going to make shots. They're going to be fine offensively. I also think it's worth noting that a team that's the best offense in the league and a bottom five defense is not getting anywhere. So if it takes away from your offense a bit, and then you have to eventually work through those things, but you are improving your defense in the process, then sure. I don't know that they have been improving their defense is maybe the more concerning part here. Like, there've been moments,
looks
right?
Worse. It looks worse. I think
it does look worse at times. There's moments it looks better. They're fouling a lot, and I think the fouling will calm down.
That's the thing. They're playing, and Mike has, I think you pointed that out at the last practice, was we need to learn, I think it might say last night too, we need to learn how to play defense without fouling. And right now we're just kind of saying that they can't. They can't right now.
No, but this is the reigning coach of the year, dude. Like, this guy's going to figure it out. It's...
Well, I'm looking at this.
How many times have the Sacramento Kings fired a coach too early? Oh, well, not too early, but
we can't go down this road.
Like,
but
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know,
no, I mean? I'm talking
about six games.
Not you and me. I'm saying we, like, as far as I hope that does not start becoming a conversation right. from a bad week and a half here.
Yeah, but absolutely not.
Mike Brown is the guy. If he cannot fix this team, I don't really know who can come in and do a better job than what he is doing. And again, the defense is one thing, but to kind of just go back real quick, ping pong to the offense for a second, as far as the emphasis not being on their record-breaking offense. This is the De'Aaron Fox effect, because mm-hmm. in three games with De'Aaron Fox this year, Sacramento Kings are 2-1. They average 125.3 points per game on 46% shooting from the field and 35% from three. In the three games without De'Aaron Fox, as Bass performance loads, they're averaging 95 points per game on 41% shooting and 31% from three. There's a 30-point difference, Brendan. And you know how many points De'Aaron Fox is at? Do you know how many points De'Aaron Fox is averaging right now?
30.
30 on the nose. So look, it's fully warranted for people to look at this and kind of say, okay, when Fox comes back, things will be better. Sure. I think when De'Aaron Fox comes back, the Kings will be a significantly better basketball team. But the main thing for the Kings going forward, and this is they have to learn how to survive. Like, games like this where De'Aaron Fox is out, or if Domantas Sabonis has to miss some time, how much will that impact their offense? I mean, I don't think it'll be to this extent as De'Aaron Fox. I think we're kind of getting that answer right now, but they have to learn how to survive without De'Aaron Fox, because the numbers, they lay it out pretty clearly that they miss him a lot. But I don't think it's fair to bank on anybody playing all 82 as much as you might want them to. I mean, right. Just our friend Anthony Davis said he wanted to play the whole year. And then last night he,
shocker,
got a groin thing or something. Yeah. So he's might miss some time.
Yeah, they definitely missed De'Aaron, and De'Aaron was balling to start the year, doing it on the defensive end too. He was throwing up like 9 threes a game, hitting him at a decent rate. He, you know, looked like first team, all team, first, second team, all NBA guy, and through three games, obviously.
Still could.
He was killing it in the playoffs. Like, a lot of teams really struggle when you lose your star. De'Aaron did get his high school jersey retired, and mm-hmm. it was funny. I just remember this, but at some point in his speech, he said something along the lines of, you know, I appreciate everybody being here, because I'm just going to say it, Houston's a place people like to go out in. They did spend two nights in Houston.
Houston flew? Are we saying there was?
I'm saying.
Was there? And it was on a weekend too. Friday night.
I saw it on a weekend.
Friday night.
Just saying. Just saying, because they just really did not look locked in.
The jersey retirement was like a 7 o'clock. Like, you think those guys wouldn't be able to go have a night? I mean, we're not saying they did or didn't. I'm just saying
no clue.
Houston,
but, like, there's
the fact
no.
That he said it.
This is the point where we're at. We're trying to figure out, why did these guys not look ready to play?
Why yeah. are they averaging literally 94 points per game? I mean, they just there's got to be a solution. That's an easy hypothesis right there, an easy thing to hypothesize that, okay, they're playing through a little flu, a little Houston flu.
You never know. You never know. A little more of those De'Aaron numbers with him on the floor this year. I think I actually went through these already.
No, you didn't. If it was your tweet, I just saw it a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
That was not read. Please share.
119.9 with him on the floor. Ironically, the exact same offensive rating with him on the floor as last season so far. But a 108.3 defensive rating plus 11.6 net rating with De'Aaron Fox on the floor this season in a pace of 103. Without De'Aaron Fox on the floor, the offensive rating drops 19 points from 119.9 to 100.5. The defensive rating actually jumps up 8 points from 108.3 to 116.4. The net rating, Frankie, I'm not the quickest at math here. Let's see.
No, me either, buddy.
27 point difference plus 11.19 with De'Aaron. Without, minus 15.9. And the pace also goes down about 5 from 103.5 to 98.7.
Well, that's the thing. Again, we talk about identity. And
yep.
I think Davion Mitchell is pretty quick. I mean, again, he doesn't have the quickness with the basketball. I think De'Aaron Fox is the fastest player in the NBA with the ball in his hands. I think that's actually proven. I don't think Davion Mitchell can step in and do that, but he's no slouch. He's quick. The fact that the Kings have not been running they have not been pushing the pace. Like, we're kind of seeing set offensive, like, bringing the ball, walking the ball down in set offensive sets. Like, I just don't know if that's quite where the Kings are at their best. I mean, running the tempo and having De'Aaron Fox push it, or even get some guys going downhill, like Harrison Barnes on the break, has been very good. He hasn't been aggressive. Domantas Sabonis in Houston was not running the offense as much in the open court, which we've seen him do with his little skips and his jumps. And, like, he just is kind of, like, there's walking the ball down and setting it up. I'm not sure if that's a game plan for Houston and what kind of defense they have. I'm not sure if that's what that was, but like I said, De'Aaron Fox has been, I think, a massive loss, obviously. And it's good news because he will not be missing that much more time. But again, it all just kind of goes back to all these numbers we've been throwing out, just how valuable, when you talk about MVP stuff, how valuable De'Aaron Fox is to this team. If this trend continues and he comes back and the Kings just start flying again, something to think about.
It is. And De'Aaron coming back answers a lot of these questions. I don't think that anybody is blameless through these two Houston games. Like, Keon played solid. Sure, Kessler played solid. Like, I thought that Colby did okay. There was a lot of moments where he had kind of struggled to bring the ball up the floor, or just got poked away too, and the offense is starting 8 seconds later than it should or something like that. But I don't think anybody's blameless. I do think there is, just to echo this, what I said earlier, like, I thought Keegan created decent looks, but then just didn't pull them and just did a little bit too much. And I think that's a processing thing, that getting to watch back the film of these games will be beneficial for Keegan. And the team's going to do a lot to try to adjust. You know, this is going to be a process. It's 6 games. This is exactly where they were at last year when it comes to record through 6 games. And they finished with 48 wins, third in the West. So this is going to be a process. And, you know, I get the frustration, but there's more games ahead. You have a good bounce back opportunity against Portland, even if you blew your last bounce back opportunity.
Yeah. And I guess the only part that does hurt, like you pointed out with the Warriors game the other night, that it's early in the season, but it's going to be a pretty hotly contested race for a playoff spot. And I mean, again, Houston, I don't really expect them to be in that mix, but you kind of put yourself behind the eight ball immediately with 2 straight losses. So they lead the season series 2-0. The Warriors are leading the Kings 2-0. So you can't keep falling behind these Western Conference opponents. In a year like this, you just can't, where, especially when you're seeing teams like Minnesota looks great. I mean, the Warriors seem like, as long as Steph Curry is, you know, has a pulse, they're going to be in it. The Lakers have looked decent at times. They're a question mark, but I mean, there are more teams that are going to be in the race this year than last year. And you can't keep losing to these guys early in the season. So, one last note on them before I know we're winding down, but, last year, Kings were not a good rebounding team. And as far as things that we're carrying over this year, they are still not a good rebounding team. They are 21st in the NBA in total rebounds. They are 23rd in defensive rebounds. Again, Domantas Sabonis has been great, 13 rebounds per game. I believe he's among the league leaders. But I'm looking at other guys on here, and one person, again, I hate to keep going at him, but the fact that Harrison Barnes, who is averaging 5 rebounds per game for his career, who during his time in a Kings jersey is averaging 5.3 rebounds for his career, he's averaging 2.3 rebounds per game, and he's playing 32 minutes a night. That's just unacceptable. I mean, that can't happen. You can't be the starting small / power forward. I know that there's not really a clear. I think that Keegan is now the 3. I'm pretty sure he's now the small forward, but your starting power forward cannot be a 2 rebound per game guy. I mean, that just can't happen. And so we keep saying 6 games, but 1 rebound last night, I almost flipped my lid. I just can't.
It doesn't make sense. Like,
crash the boards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crash the boards.
I agree.
Kevin Huerter is. And I'll give to
he
that.
He definitely point, has been.
I will give Kevin Huerter some credit. Let me just pull up his last couple of games before we get out of here. But Kevin Huerter on the season, 6 games, I know, but 5 rebounds per game. You love to see it. He's been trying to find a way to make an impact because he's shooting 32% from the field and 24 from 3. But his last couple of games here, 5 rebounds down to 2, then 7, 9, 4, and 4. So, hey, he's trying to make an impact where he can, but the shots seem to fall. I get that. But Kings need to rebound better. They can't make the playoffs again or be a team in the hunt if they're 24th, 25th in rebounding and in defense. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. I think the offense is eventually going to be fine. I also don't have a great explanation for why it hasn't been, which is concerning, you know.
They need a slump buster kind of a game. They need a game where they come out and just pour on 135 and they shoot, you know, 25 of 52 from 3. Like, they're not 25, that'd be crazy, but 20 of, you know, have a great night from 3. And they just haven't really had it yet. So they're due. That's, I guess, the thing we can just say. They're due.
Usually you had De'Aaron and Domas doing their typical production, and then one other guy would have a night. Or maybe you'd get like decent nights from 2. And to just have 2 straight games where just nobody is crazy.
Keon Ellis.
You're right. You're right. Keon did a team high 15, which is kind of funny.
That's a good point, though. That was the great part about last year. And a great part about, I'm sure we will see at some point this year, though, is there were so many different guys that would, like you said, step up every night. It wasn't De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis. Yeah, they'd get their 20, 10 or whatever. But Trey Lyles would get you 20 one night. Terrence Davis, when he was here, would get you 20 one night. Malik Monk, I mean, I don't know how many Kings have scored over 20 this year, but I think it's just Fox, Sabonis, and HB.
I think HB that's the only 33 in that opener.
Yeah, I don't know if Malik's crossed 20 yet. So I'm not really – I have it right here. Malik Monk, he scored 22 against the Lakers. Okay, in the game that Fox went out and he had to take over in overtime. Yeah. So I just to say, if De'Aaron Fox is playing, I don't know if that 22 happens, but you need more from everybody. I mean, literally I can say you need more from – everybody. I don't know if there's one player we can look at and say, hey, you're good. Just keep on keeping on. De'Aaron Fox, when he's healthy, I guess, but there's not one player that is playing great basketball right now. And that's the beauty of the fact that it's an 82 game season.
And they're not a trash team. I'm still convinced they are not a trash.
The Kings?
Team. Yes.
No.
No, I know. And I know you're not saying that. I'm just saying in general, like some reactions are getting to the point of like, oh my gosh, this team sucks. And I think that there might be some people, you know, understandably getting a little triggered from years prior, from a decade and a half prior.
Oh, yeah.
So I get it. But like, this team is still competitive. It's still good. We're just trying to figure out what tier of good to great this great. Team to be in.
Well, again, those are Mike's words, not yours. I mean, Mike Brown said, that's the goal. How can this team become great? He said it in The Athletic. Mm-hmm. He said, I think on All the Smoke, but he's been saying it a lot. They've been preaching a lot of the same things. They want to be better defensively, and they don't want to be a flash in the pan. They don't want to be good. They want to be great. And you got to go through some growing pains, and they're going through it, you know, pretty front and center right now.
Yeah. And coach just kept talking about how, you know, he's like, as weird as this sounds, like adversity is a good thing. And, you know, I get it. It's learning lessons.
It is until it's not adversity anymore. So that's true. You got to make this not, you have to make this adversity. You can't make this a part of who you are. That's the main thing.
That's a good way to put it for sure. Can we close with something that in my mind is fun? Some people might find it again, sure. Triggering, I guess.
Okay.
But in the spirit of that last game, what comes to your mind as previous games you've watched in years prior that had like a feeling like that? Like the Boston games do it for me.
Like what? Like watching like
when they go to Boston, they get just destroyed. There was that one game where Tyrese's last year, they lost by like
55.
I think there's a screenshot of them being down 60.
They were down by 60, and I think that was the game where TD got hurt. And
that's right.
It was a bad night. I think that was coming down the stretch on the trade too. They were about to make that trade. But
that was, because Tyrese had the whole post game thing of, I will not let the spirit of the Sacramento Kings infect me in this organization and blah, blah, blah. And
that's right.
We're going to turn it around and I'm going to be here for it. Later.
Honestly, I do admire that. He really just didn't buy in. I admire it, but yeah, that's tough to listen to now, especially now that he's like people are comparing him to Steve Nash today, saying he's like a better Steve Nash. Maybe we'll see again, very early in his career too, but I think he's great. Very. But no, you know, it's funny. I honestly might've manifested this in a bad way. I was watching, funny enough, Tyrese Haliburton. I was watching some highlights of Fox and Haliburton, like games that they both like played well in. Just kind of reminisce a little bit and just kind of see how they played off each other. And one of the games they were down by, I think like 25 in the first half. I can't remember who they were playing against. It might've been, it was a home game. I'll have to remember it, but I showed my girlfriend, I said, like, remember these days when we had just watched them just get completely just destroyed every night? And last night she was making dinner and she like called over with what's the score? I'm like, oh, they're down by 27.
Like, yeah, you know, just, did it feel familiar?
Oh yeah, it feels so. This is my, I think, like when I was part time, I was writing recaps too, and like 2019, 2020, or maybe even a year before, they would just get killed so often. And I would just be writing my recap in like the third quarter, like the beginning of the third quarter, I'd just be getting my stuff down. And last night was more like a event. Like if anyone wants to read it, you can go look at mine and Brendan's work on SacramentoSports.com. But it was more of an event. And it's the good thing about, for us, I guess, for writers like us, the good thing about games like last night is it's easy to write about and get it done quick when they're just getting completely, you know, when they're getting the doors blown off like last night. And it was reminiscent. It was a little triggering, but I did watch SpongeBob last night for the first time, like in a long time. And dude, it is so funny. Like it is hilarious. I just thought like, I'm going to put it on. Like they're all on Paramount Plus. So I watched the first one and it's funny how much
first one.
It's funny how many like iconic things are from like the first one, like the bubble episode where Squidward, I mean, you have to just watch it. It's just all these, or SpongeBob with the frying or the spatula with like three arms on it that goes like fat. These things in the first episode and all these memes. And it really helped me feel better. I felt a lot more cheered up after watching SpongeBob.
I do get caught up on those on TikTok Lives.
It was like the whole episode, right?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll just be playing through an episode and then I get stuck on it a little bit. And the next thing I know, just my algorithm is nothing but that.
SpongeBob. It's funny though, because like I haven't watched him in a long time and it's not like kid humor. It's not like, oh, this is for 6-7 year old. No, this is like, it's just funny for everybody. If I think, but then I know there are some kids like down the street that weren't allowed to watch SpongeBob and like those kids were weird.
Jeez. Those kids were weird.
were you able to watch SpongeBob when you were a kid?
Yeah, for sure. I was watching SpongeBob and I watched Fairly Odd Parents every day before elementary school.
Yes, Fairly Odd Parents.
Drake and Josh.
Yeah, I watched Drake and Josh. All that might have been a little before your time, but I watched all that. Like we're like 4 years apart.
Not
still.
Before my time.
I know.
But, lags.
Well, I'm like 4 years apart, but I watched all that.
Watch it, to be fair, but
yeah, I don't know. I watched the classics, Rocket Power, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The hits,
and then just a lot of bad Sacramento Kings games.
Honestly, I am amazed how I remember the World Series one night. I think it was in 2009 or 10, and the World Series was on. It was like a good game, and the Kings were playing in Minnesota on opening night, and I was like, I don't want to watch this game. And they were down by, again, like 30 points in the first half. And my friends were just like, dude, you are a sad person. And I remember I was like 14 or like, dude, you're sad. And yeah, I was a sicko forever. I mean, you're a sicko too. You're a basketball. I'm sure you watched a lot of sick games over the years.
Yeah, a decent bit. Hopefully the Kings don't have too many more this year. I think this will be a learning lesson. It happening two games in a row is concerning. We laid it out. You have an opportunity Wednesday night against Portland. Right the ship. And then you got the, by the way, in-season tournament game against OKC, which can I just add that I love that Steph Curry is like, I don't know if he's pretending, but like is getting hyped about this. Like they won their first in-season tournament game. And he said something along the lines of like one step closer to Vegas. And he's like screaming it, running out the tunnel. And then he tweeted about it, or he put out an Instagram post about it. It said one step closer to Vegas. And I'm like, man, I would love if guys bought into this because I think it could be fun as it's actually here. It does excite me, I will admit.
Yeah, I'm very excited for Friday, like what the atmosphere is going to look like. And aside from the in-season tournament, like that just by itself, the fact that, assuming Fox is playing, and like Trey Lyles hopefully is back, the full Kings are going. Kings and Thunder, I've been looking at that one for a while, just as far as like kind of a heat check as far as where these teams are. And I think the fact that you're going to be playing for something with, you know, the in-season tournament, something on the line, it's going to make it a little more juicy, but I'm not very excited for the court. I don't think the Kings court is that bad, but
no, but that's just relative, right? Because some of these others are horrible. The Kings court is bad in my mind. Some of these other ones, like the Bulls, it's like, what are we doing?
But they're distracting. They're distracting. And like people are saying like their eyes like actually hurt watching on TV. And it's like, yeah, no, I completely get that. It is distracting.
Yeah.
And the combination of the jerseys and the floor, I think it's going to take away a little bit. I'm going to have to really kind of focus. It's better that we're going to be there. But that part, I just, again, less is more. I don't know why the NBA is doing all these, like, they're doing more and more. Like, less is more. I mean, if it was just, like, the team's logo with, like, the trophy behind it, like NBA Finals style or like, early 2000s, that'd be great. I think that'd be more than enough. But instead, they decided to blind us, so...
I think a different court for these games is a good idea to make it really obvious when these games are happening, but it did not need to be this extreme, to your point.
Nobody asked for this.
No, literally nobody.
Nobody asked for this at all. I mean, the jerseys is one thing, but my goodness, what are we doing with the – it's like people are saying a Boise State – have you seen the Boise State football field, how it's like blue?
Yes.
This is that for the NBA. Like KD's quote in that video, he's like, this is – we're playing on a purple court in the NBA.
Yeah. The only two I think I really liked were Boston and Milwaukee.
I like Toronto's.
Because those were more like casual primary colors. Toronto's, yeah.
It's like, I think it's black and gray, I think. I think that's the only colors that it is. But
the bright one I weirdly didn't hate was Indy's. They went with like this like yellow and blue. They're both sort of like more fluorescent that I thought were weirdly cool.
Yeah. And also the jerseys, the jerseys are largely horrible too. I mean, I don't really know what is going on.
The Kings have one of the better ones.
For sure. And I've seen that in like reviews and everything, but the Warriors is weird. It's like someone put together a jersey in the dark. Like the letters are like not quite a wave. And then like, the Lakers have like it's like a pyramid of like saying Los Angeles, but like the A's like horrible. The A's off center. And it's just, I don't really understand what the thought process is. I don't know. It makes you wonder because the NBA and Nike, that deals up next year. So you have to wonder, are they going to go back to Adidas? I mean, I personally hope Nike, I'm a Nike guy, but
same.
I'd be willing if Adidas is like got some better thinkers going on over there.
Maybe Under Armour.
Maybe Curry Brand.
Yeah, Curry Brand. A new alternate jersey. Yeah.
Well, what do you, just right. Before we go, I don't, Chris and I do this too. We did it last week, but what are you hoping? I think there's two games the rest of the week. So what are you hoping for the next two games? You think a split would be ideal? Anything except 0-2, I guess, to me is the goal right now. Anything other than 0-2.
Yeah, I guess a split. I agree with you. Anything other than 0-2.
Like they should beat Portland. Beat Portland.
Exactly.
Beat Portland. If you lose to the OKC, who looks good, like a good team, that's sure. But you cannot lose to the Portland Trailblazers after losing two to the Rockets. It just can't happen.
It's specifically after losing the two to the Rockets that it's like, there's just no way. I thought that, you know, maybe losing one of the Houston games would have been understandable, but losing two is ridiculous. And you cannot drop three straight games to teams that are expected to be out of the playoffs in the West.
When Brendan Nunes speaks, you must listen, because I was very just like, Rockets or Kings are going to beat them. And you were like, I don't know.
I guess. I mean, yeah, I do think Houston's solid. Like, they're not the worst team, one of the worst teams in the league like they were last year necessarily. Well, no. I think it's relative, I guess, because I think a lot of teams just got better.
I mean, look at the guys they brought in. I mean, Van Vliet, and I hate to give Dylan Brooks credit too, but he played a hell of a couple of games against the Kings. You got to tip your cap to him, and he made life difficult for him and blew a lot of kisses to the bench. And even Brown on the guys after, like, yeah, there's not really anything you can do about that. I mean, it's like, again, not to bring up baseball, but if someone pimps a home run off you, you kind of got to wear it. Guy got you. Dylan Brooks got the Kings the other night, got him fair and square. So when that happens, you can talk that talk. So do you think, last question, will we get a Murray versus Murray sighting tomorrow night? Like late in the game, maybe. Like if one of the teams, let's say the Kings are up by 20 with 4 minutes left. Do we
Chris
see?
Chris hasn't been playing, right? That's why he's saying that.
Yeah. Do we see Chris Murray come in to go against Keegan one time? Or do you think it's kind of like, maybe in a year or two?
Games. He has come in for two games, 5 minutes in each one. Definitely garbage time. Sure. Just because it'd be cool.
We should hope
Family should, I'd imagine, be in the building.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine that Canyon and the fam will be there.
Yeah. I'll say sure.
Let's hope for it. Yeah. I'm going, yeah. I think let's have some fun.
Sure.
That'd be fun if, like, Keegan was off the floor and then Chris goes to the table and then they sub Keegan in at the same time and the crowd goes crazy. That'd be a fun scene.
Yeah. And, yeah. Hopefully, also, by the way, we don't get any sort of update on, like, Duarte or Domas or, like, any of these, like, small nicks from yesterday.
I was a little worried about that, too, and I kind of thought about it till right now, but when he banged knees late in the game, down 30, I'm like, what are we doing here? Why is he in the game? I think Mike was just kind of trying to look for something, get his guys just kind of to jumpstart themselves somehow, some way. Keegan and Domas were in late. I'd imagine he's okay, but again, it's 1:20. By the time people hear this, it'll probably be close to when the injury reports come out. So stay tuned to Twitter for those updates, but we'll get those up for it. But should get updates for sure on Fox and Lyles, how they're doing. So coming up this evening,
we will see. And we will see how they bounce back, the Kings, from these three straight losses, two in a row in Houston. See when De'Aaron Fox, Trey Lyles are going to return. Next game against Portland on Wednesday at home, Golden 1 Center, 7 o'clock Pacific time. And then you get the first in-season tournament game for the Kings Friday at home again, Golden 1 Center, 7 o'clock against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So basketball moves quick. The season moves fast. And this bad taste can be out your mouth by the end of the weekend if you take care of business. So,
By tomorrow night, honestly.
Yeah. If they came out and just really smacked them around.
Just take care of business.
Yeah. So we will see. And Frank and I and all the other people at Sacktown Sports are going to keep up our coverage in the process. Check that out at sacktownsports.com. And what is it? Sacktown Sports 1140 for YouTube and socials as well. So take a look for content there, and that's going to do it for the Return of the Roar podcast. So appreciate everybody listening. Be sure to subscribe and like on all platforms. Helps more than you guys realize and keeps you in touch for when we put out another one here in the next couple of days. So appreciate everybody, and talk to you later.